Welcome to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Thank you for joining us, and we ask you to visit our sponsors and supporters. My name is Bob Griswold.
Mary Griswold.
Pat Park. Nadine Buchanan.
Kim Fink.
Where are we going to start off?
We're going to start on a lighter note because some of the stuff we're dealing with today is going to be pretty heavy.
Okay, well, that means you've thrown the ball into my court.
By the way, now let's interrupt the show. Pat, yeah. Happy birthday tomorrow or the day before yesterday, depending upon when you hear this show.
Yes. Well, since my birthday is on 9/11, I turned 50 on the day the towers went down.
Oh, ouch.
Which, so it was a black birthday. So I don't normally celebrate my birthday on the 11th. Either the day before or the day after, because the 11th to me is a special day. So that's why I brought birthday cake today. With roses.
With roses.
My favorite.
Again, happy birthday.
Thank you very much. I'm 75, folks.
And she doesn't look a day over 60.
Especially not when I'm styling in my Camaro.
With the lid down.
I ran over the curb today.
Uh-oh.
Anyway, because I used to teach at a college, I like to keep track of these articles that talk about the kind of courses that students can take at other universities and earn credit towards graduation. So this article in American Thinker today... it's entitled, The Nutty Professors Are Offering a Plethora of Idiot-Minded Wokester Courses This Year. Now, out-of-state tuition for UC Cal Berkeley runs $43,000 a year. And though you can't take a class on Western civilization or government, you can take classes such as How to Solve the Rubik's Cube and Henna Art Application and Cultural Perspectives. Henna is that color ink. It's kind of a maroon color.
That they draw beautiful designs. They
like like a temporary tattoo.
Yes. Yes, on Indian brides.
Yeah. Yes.
In India, Indians from India, not Native Americans. These are legitimate for credit courses, and they're created by the school's DECAL, DECAL program, which stands for Democratic Education. So there you go. There's a progressive clue. As soon as they use the word democratic, you know it's left-wing claptrap. They have over 150 DECAL courses, and the school says they're an excellent way of meeting the university's minimum unit requirement towards graduation. So
I can get an advanced degree in tiddlywinks.
Yeah. Grades are typically only offered as pass, no pass. Why wouldn't you do that instead of taking 3 credit hours in history or politics or language?
This is the equivalent of underwater basket weaving.
Yes.
But you can get a degree now in it called general studies.
Right. You could always get general studies.
So, but it doesn't major in anything. So if you're just looking for easy pass, fail.
A lot of football players did general studies.
Yeah. Can we get federal financing to take these courses?
I assume that if you have student aid, it pays for all your classes. Any rate, the other courses offered include Cal Pokemon Academy, UC Marvel Cinematic Universe, and of course UC Hogwarts, The Wonderful Wizarding World of Harry Potter. Pokemon Academy will cover the history of the franchise and allow for the discussion of social issues within the Pokeverse. Huh. I never did Pokemon, so I don't know what social issues they could be talking about. Marvel Cinematic Universe students will be expected to watch at least 3 Marvel films and comment on the ethical, political, and economic themes that are highlighted within. And those students taking Hogwarts class will be commenting on social hierarchies and with a concentration on authoritarianism, and they'll be making their own wands.
You know what's really sad about that?
What?
I couldn't pass any of those courses because I know nothing about any of those things. And I'm supposedly an intelligent person.
But ask me if I care.
Well, that's a whole nother thing.
but going back into Pokemon a number of years ago, everybody had to take their Pokemon pictures everywhere and tell everybody where you are when you took this picture. And that, as far as I know, that was China collecting evidence as to what buildings looked like and what interior sections of buildings. So we were all conspirators against her.
I never did Pokemon, so I didn't help the Chinese.
Well, me either.
Things are not always as they appear to be. Yeah. That is the lesson there. Mm-hmm. Okay, I want to change the subject drastically. And I want to talk...
Well, wait a minute. Don't we have any more courses to take?
No, that's the only ones they mentioned.
And as you said, nothing in Western civilization?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay, I want to talk about the attack on Qatar, however you choose to pronounce it, by the IDF, because there are some interesting aspects to that attack that have come out very recently that I think are kind of wild. The leaders of Hamas have been hanging out in luxury suites in Qatar for quite a while this whole war, ever since October 7th, while this whole thing has been going on. So they haven't been impacted by the war at all. But they've been doing the negotiation. And so Trump put something on the table where they had to get together and talk about the offer he put on the table. Well, somebody, whether it was Israel or America, I don't know, had the intelligence on where they were going to meet. So Israel just happened to do a precision strike on that location. So my first question is, who are we negotiating with now? Because we just wiped out all the leadership. And might that be a message to Qatar? Because Qatar's been playing both sides of the coin for a lot of years. And the only reason that they have a friendly relationship with America is that we have a major military base in their country. So it's to our advantage to stay on good terms with them. It's to their advantage because of what that base offers to their economy for them to stay on good terms with us. I don't think we're directly involved in this strike, but I have a feeling that at some point we were made aware of it, either as it happened or slightly before.
And your point is, should we still feel sad for these guys?
No. But who do we negotiate with now?
Well, I guess if there's anybody behind the scenes, they'll have to come forward.
And their expected lifespan is?
Yeah. Well, you know, Israel said they were going to get the bad guys, and this goes a long way to settling that score.
And Trump said, you know, Hamas, it's time for you to give in, or things are going to get ugly. Well, things just got ugly.
Yeah. The other thing that I know happened recently was that in Israel or in Gaza, that Israel has destroyed many of the high-rise buildings because they were being used as high points for insurgents to shoot at the IDF forces, and there are fewer high points.
If you look at leadership, just as not and how it goes in our military, but in tribal things, a lot of times it's father, son, you know, familial. Mm-hmm. But I don't know how their hierarchy goes, but this could also open the door to a lot of infighting amongst themselves for the next role of leadership,
yes, right.
Which could also work in favor of the Israelis because of the confusion and lack of leadership while they fight to decide who's going to be the next big dog.
Well, you talk about the hierarchy thing. It's very interesting that the son of the founder, evidently, of Hamas, during his time in Israeli prison, became a Christian and was working in Hamas as an Israeli spy for a while and is speaking out against what Hamas is doing. He's been at a couple of different forums speaking out against this. So I guess that's a hierarchy that didn't quite go the way Hamas wanted it to.
You know, one of the other things along with this is the UN General Assembly convenes in New York with plans to take up the Palestinian statehood, which they should not do because it's against the charter of the UN to discuss this.
Plus, we're going to veto it anyway.
We're going to veto it anyway, yeah. So they're taking it up, and it is totally against their charter.
Well, France and Britain have said they want a Palestinian state, but if you look at the situation with immigration and France and Britain, they may be trying to prevent riots in their own country because Britain has been overrun by illegal immigrants, as has France. France to the point where many of the sidewalk cafes have stopped serving wine and stopped serving pork. And there was just an incident in Texas where they passed a law barring Sharia law because the Muslims were trying to pressure a lot of the restaurants to stop serving wine and stop serving pork.
And selling lottery tickets.
Yes, I forgot about that. But if you're going to live in America, you need to live by American laws, and you need to be willing to assimilate. If you don't want to assimilate, please go home.
Well, I feel that way about the United Nations. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but I don't see how the United Nations being in New York is a benefit to the United States.
It's not.
Our security mm-hmm. or anything.
When they have this meeting, it's hooker time. I mean, when you listen to the podcast, the talkers, they all talk about how all the hookers convene on the UN building when they have these meetings where they all show up. They order them up. And these aren't the cheap hookers walking the sidewalk. These are the fancy call girls.
They also clog up traffic in lower Manhattan.
And they also travel with diplomatic immunity.
And park with diplomatic immunity, yes.
Yes. No, we need to kick them out and turn the building into some kind of condos that we can charge taxes on, which will take care of New York City's financial
problems. It would
make
great high-rise pickleball courts.
Well, the UN's just turned into a giant anti-Israel lobby.
There.
But it's anti-American as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we should not
Why
pay.
Should we host them when everybody that attends seems to hate us and they're supposed to be the peace-loving allies?
That's a good question.
Well, you know, folks, on that, I think we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is CCTA Wake Up Call.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
The County Compass is a rapidly growing, free weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news, coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout Eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Welcome back again. Thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. We're going to shift gears and head out to the incident that happened out in Charlotte, where a young immigrant, Ukrainian immigrant
fled to America for safety.
Came to America for safety, and all of a sudden, she was killed on their subway system or their
light rail
system. What do we want to say about that? Because this was a case where she was coming home from her pizza job,
and she was stupid enough to put her back to that guy. And then bury yourself in her phone.
Well, I would like to point out, everybody's talking about race, and I would just like to point out that her actions of just going in and sitting down in front of a black person getting on in a car that everybody else in there was black obviously shows she was not a racist nor concerned about being in the environment. So that leads me to believe the people that are saying that it's not a race issue. It is a race issue, because if it had been turned around and it had been all white people and a black person getting killed, I believe they would have been burning down Charlotte, i.e. George Floyd.
And it would have been the front page of every newspaper, whereas here it was kept quiet for...
I found out about it like 2 weeks later.
18 right. days.
18 days.
Yeah, yes. Almost 3 weeks. It took them... the mainstream media, and that was only because they finally released that video.
Right.
Once the video was out there and regular people could see it,
they couldn't deny it.
Although their articles were all couched in Republicans pounce, MAGA media drags local incident to national prominence.
Yes.
It's just a local incident. No, nothing to see here.
His own comments that are heard on video, I got the white girl.
He didn't say white girl. He said white bitch.
Oh.
Let's.
That's even worse.
Quote him truthfully.
And
that's racial animus. That's a hate crime.
And I know everyone has seen the video, and I've seen it myself in its entirety. And I like to think that the people that didn't help her initially were not aware of extent of what had happened. Because I've watched it, and I still don't see an actual stab or actual blood or any of that kind of thing. And the girl herself must have immediately been in shock, because she doesn't scream or call for help or try to get up or anything.
She just stays there, yeah.
And the people around her were kind of huddled into their corner like something had happened, but they weren't sure what, and they were trying to protect themselves. But that's an excuse for about 30 seconds.
Right.
After that,
yes,
there's no excuse. Mm-hmm.
No.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
And the surveillance videos apparently showed the blood on,
yes,
dripping from, I guess, from the knife or whatever else. And,
well, he cut his hand.
And he apparently called his sister and said that he'd cut his hand also in the action.
And again, this is someone who had been arrested
14 times. Well, Pat, could you explain to us how this magistrate process works, where somebody like this can get out with just a signature to show up?
Well, there's two issues. One, how do you have a magistrate who's not a lawyer?
I don't know.
Well, I'm going to tell you. When I was practicing in New Mexico, our magistrate wasn't a lawyer. New Mexico has three large cities and the rest of it's teeny towns. Lawyers don't want to live in the teeny towns. Almost all of them live in the three big cities. So state law makes allowances for magistrates who are not judges. I mean,
not lawyers.
Not attorneys, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. And so apparently North Carolina law does the same. The salary for that judge is $56,000. And the article I was reading about it in said lawyers wouldn't bother to apply for a job that only paid $56,000. The article went on to say that Ms. Stokes went to a law school, the Thomas Cooley Law School, which is the lowest ranked law school in the country, and she couldn't pass the bar. So she's a magistrate who's not a lawyer, and the purpose of magistrates is to take care of the little issues so that the district judges are not overburdened with doing things like arraignments on misdemeanors, setting bonds. So that's her main function, is to do that.
Do we know what his previous crimes were that he was let out for?
Larceny, robbery, assault, possession of a gun.
Mm-hmm. Communicating threats, robbery with a dangerous weapon.
Apparently this magistrate also had other businesses.
She runs an addiction counseling service. And so the question one article raised was, is she referring these people to her addiction service?
The ones she lets out on zero bond.
Right. She refers them to her addiction service, and the government pays for their services there, and she pockets the money.
Has there been any evidence of mental illness with this individual?
Well, they say he's got schizophrenia, but who says that? Him? He shows up in court and says, well, I have schizophrenia, and now his name is linked with schizophrenia.
I just mentioned that because I read an article that is hinting towards a plea of insanity.
Oh, for this one?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he gave an interview to the cops or the jailers or something where he said it's the materials inside his body that stabbed her.
Okay, the voices in his head made him do it?
No, he didn't say that. He said the government had put materials in his body.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
You know.
So that will come out in the press 100 times over.
Well,
of course.
Criminal justice system operates on the premise that whatever a defendant says, they're lying.
Well, part of the problem I see too is then when we get the politicians weighing in and the excuses that they're making, and our governor, who was attorney general, and in my opinion, again, this mm-hmm. is Kim's opinion, was soft on crime,
mm-hmm.
Says, well, we need more cops. Well, that's kind of a turnaround from where he's been in the past, number one. But number two, the cops weren't even on duty to monitor that. It's a private security company that monitors that. It's my understanding. So how about we have some cops, not just more cops? I mean, if there was nobody there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have some comments?
Yeah. When this was done, you know, the mayor came out, and her name is Mayor Vi Lyles.
And incidentally, she just won her primary election.
Oh.
Primary, yes.
She made a comment about how we should all feel sorry for the stabber, because after all, it's a mental illness, and we can't arrest our way out of crime and mental illness.
We can remove them from society.
That's right. And then let's see, what did Mr. Stein said?
He said we needed more cops.
He said, I'm heartbroken for the family of Irina Zarutska, who lost their loved one to this senseless act of violence, and I'm appalled by the footage of her murder. We need more cops on the beat to keep people safe. That's why my budget, scratch a politician. That's why my budget calls for more well-trained, blah, blah, blah. What he left out was that he used to be the state's attorney general, and that he was on the infamous North Carolina Task Force for Racial Equity and Criminal Justice, that then Governor Roy Cooper, who is now a candidate for the U.S. Senate, created in the early days of the George Floyd riots. Governor, your task force for racial, this is a question to Stein, your task force for racial equity criminal justice specifically called for increasing pretrial release and decriminalizing public behavior, meaning homelessness and being a public nuisance. Both of these policies contributed to DiCarlo Brown being on the streets and having the opportunity to commit murder. Are you going to roll back these policies that your racial task force initiated that are making North Carolinians unsafe? No answer.
Now, was the magistrate also a DEI hire?
Well, she's, I saw an article today. She was appointed by a black woman somewhere up the chain who was appointed or works for another black woman, and they're all claiming DEI credentials.
Well, the one good thing, if you can look at a good thing with this, because it was a tragedy, is that our auditor, our state auditor, Dave Bullock, has set forth where we're going. They will be investigating the Charlotte area transit system. Because it said this isn't actually the first time that there has been any incident. This is a release from official release from him from yesterday. Charlotte has faced a string of violent incidents recently on public transportation, and he cited a 64-year-old veteran was attacked on a CATS bus. And according to his family, he became paralyzed from the neck down as a result of the attack. Months later, in August, a 57-year-old veteran was hospitalized with being attacked by multiple people on a CATS bus. And then just days after that, a repeat offender who had presumably been in prison for robbery with a deadly weapon stabbed and killed a woman on the Charlotte's light rail.
You know, one of the things that I've noticed with the auditor, Dave Bullock, is he is not only auditing dollar signs, he is auditing policies and procedures. Because if you look at the DMV, which I think he has decided they need to come out from under the Department of Transportation, to be better equipped to take care of our license and stuff like that. But if he's going to take care of policies and procedures, there's a lot of holes in the policies that we see that allowed situations like this.
Well, what I see when I look at this is from a criminal justice system standpoint is we've got the governor who used to be the attorney general. We have an attorney general who... And then we have a district attorney, then we have a sheriff, then we have the magistrate, and all of them are soft on crime. So there's no way DiCarlo Brown was going to hit any of those levels of the criminal justice system.
To be held accountable, yeah.
Held accountable. The Mecklenburg County Sheriff is Gary McFadden. A Democrat, known around here among other things for refusing to cooperate with ICE detainers on violent offenders, and who has faced intense public criticism from now former chief deputies who have accused him of a toxic work culture that included racism, that he used racial slurs against both white and black deputies. The majority of his time is spent in his community. So we take that, the time that Brown spent with us versus the time he is with the community. Who failed him? I didn't fail him. The community failed him. There we go. Simple, progressive. He didn't do it.
It's not my fault.
Yeah, the government failed.
It's somebody else's.
Yeah. Also, if it's mental illness that made him attack this woman, there were other people on that light rail system before she got on. He didn't choose to attack anybody else.
No.
Well, we don't know how long he was on the train either.
Okay. Folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Again, this is CCTA Wake Up Call.
What's the largest gun shop in Craven County? If you said East 70 Pond, you are correct. Since Drew got back from the most recent gun show, new guns have been pouring in faster than they can open the boxes. The large showroom at East 70 Pond, slam bam, full of firearms. New guns and used guns, long guns and handguns. You will find weapons for self-defense, hunting, target shooting, and collectibles. The team at East 70 Pond is friendly, courteous, and knowledgeable, especially in the area of guns. If East 70 Pond doesn't doesn't have the gun you are looking for, they'll try to find it. If you want to do a gun transfer, E70 Pawn will help you do it right. If you are looking to buy, sell, or trade a gun, there's no better place to do it than E70 Pawn. Of course, E70 has tools, electronics, trolling motors, and a great selection of jewelry. But their specialty is guns. And we're talking hundreds of guns. Come see for yourself. E70 Pawn, across from Craven County Fairgrounds, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Welcome back again. Thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Now, we're going to talk about, first thing, let's put on God and Country Christian Alliance. They're sponsoring their annual banquet Monday. Now, this show is going to air on Saturday and Sunday, so we're talking about Monday the 15th. Mm-hmm. And Nadine, fill us in.
Yes, the annual God and Country Christian Alliance banquet is this Monday, September the 15th. The doors open at 5:30. The festivities will start at 6:30. Clarence Henderson is the keynote speaker. So that is in itself worth the $30 individual ticket, which still can be available to be purchased at the door. If you don't have your tickets, please come to God and Country Banquet September 15th.
At
5:30 p.m. is doors open. Start time 6:30 at the Havelock Tourist Center.
And Clarence Henderson's background. Let's fill that in for folks that may or may not know.
He was one of the four people sitting at the Woolworths counter in 1960 or 59?
69.
59?
69.
No?
No.
No.
It was 59 or 60.
59 or 60. We're not, yeah. Really? But he was in the Woolworths counter in Greensboro.
Yes.
And he's...
You gonna look it up?
We're trying to find it. We're looking very, very quickly.
And he is also very conservative.
Yes. And is a great speaker.
Great speaker. And
very politically active.
Yes, it was 1960 Woolworth.
Woolworths.
Woolworth counter.
Okay, 1960. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. But he is going to be a treat. I'm really looking forward to that. I think that is going to be amazing.
Mm-hmm. Come join us.
Yes. Again, Monday, September 15th. Doors open 5:30. Everything begins 6:30. Mm-hmm. Havelock Convention or Visitor Center. Tourist Center. Pat, you wanted to bring us.
I have I know what the article is that Mary wants to talk about coming up about Article 2 power of the presidency, and I want to shoehorn in this little prefatory article. Recently, it was reported that 12 federal district judges, in anonymity, complained to NBC that the Supreme Court doesn't have their backs. They were complaining that the Supreme Court was overturning them all the time and doesn't have their backs.
Well, if they followed the law and the Constitution, they wouldn't have to worry
about that. Well, it's a very illuminating remark. You don't have our backs. Well, that's not how this is supposed to work, Judge E. Poos. For example, I'll give you an example. The decision to close Alcatraz...
Alligator
Alcatraz was premised on the tribes that sued, that the lights were too bright. Do you remember this? The lights were too bright to look at the stars, and there was too much noise to so that you couldn't interact with the local fauna and flora.
Air conditioning's not quite right either.
Right. And it turned out that the airport there is active 24/7. The lights shine 24/7. So there's noise, there's activity, there's blinding light. So how did this judge get off deciding that no bright lights from Alligator or Alcatraz because it would bother
the nightlife?
They ignored facts, they ignored the law, and they come up with this, TRO. Not only that, but told them to dismantle it, to tear it down. And the judge premised her order on the fact that because the feds were paying Florida, Florida built it. It belonged to Florida. But this was brought under a federal environmental law. The state doesn't have to do an environmental plan before they built the Alcatraz. The feds would. She premised hers on the fact that, well, it's a federal facility because the Floridians built it and the feds are paying for it. Therefore, it's a federal facility. They should have done this. So, I mean, talk about twisting the law.
Creative writing.
Yes. They should be embarrassed to be overturned on stuff that thin.
Well, the courts have done restraining orders that are far above their authority the whole time he's been in office.
Well, that's the point. These 12 judges that are complaining about it are saying the Supreme Court should stop overruling them because they don't have their backs. That's not the standard.
The courts don't have the authority.
Something called the
being overruled.
Something called the Constitution.
I don't understand why what's in effect doesn't stay in effect until it is overturned. As they're challenging things, like when this judge put that Alcatraz order in place, why the Trump administration couldn't just say, well, we're going to keep operating it until the litigation is done.
They were allowed to operate it as long as there were the present detainees in there.
Okay, so when they were gone, they couldn't bring more in.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Right.
Now, I want to talk, there was an article at Powerline Blog by John Hinderaker, who is a lawyer.
Who is a lawyer. There's three of them that set that up.
Yeah,
they're all three lawyers.
Yeah. I love that blog. And he points out that under Article 2 of the Constitution, the president is the executive branch. But over the years, that power has been diluted by independent agencies, things like the SEC, the FTC, and all that.
Diluted or delegated?
Both.
Diluted.
Diluted is probably a better word.
Because Congress passes the laws that create those agencies. So they're intentionally encroaching on the president's authority as the executive.
And the article points out that now Congress is fighting the president when he tries to fire people in these agencies. If he is the executive branch, he has the right to fire people.
Yeah, the agencies, the way it works is the agencies and everybody in the executive branch works on the premise that he is delegating power to them. So for Congress to say, yeah, they're in the executive branch, but you have no control over them. So no president has ever dared challenge this. Trump has come in and said, I'm the executive branch, and I intend to use all of the powers granted to me by Article 2. So anything that's in my way, I will push aside. So he's, tried to fire the FTC, fired the BLS. He's trying to fire the reserve governor.
And Powell, yes.
Yes. Saved by her sorority sister.
Didn't we have a situation when Bill Clinton was president where Hillary was acting in some capacity and fired people from the transportation?
Yes.
And that was based on you serve at my pleasure and I can change this anytime I want. Wasn't that a similar?
They were making travel arrangements for the first lady. I think that was
Well, for the White House, they were
White House travel agency, and they wanted Bill and Hillary wanted to get some of their friends in there.
But they called it Travelgate.
Yeah, because they concocted a case against them, which was went through the courts for years. Finally, they were the people in the travel agency were found innocent of any wrongdoing. But, of course, by then the damage had been done.
But the statement was, you serve at my pleasure. And that was my understanding
of
the...
I think she was using the royal we.
Okay.
And the other part of this is these agencies generally are populated by Democrats. And they have
unaccountable,
been,
unelected.
And they've been fighting President Trump since he got in the first time. And as Pat said, he is the only president, Republican president, who's been willing to fight back.
Any president. The Democrats didn't do it either.
But it's ridiculous. I mean, who is supposed to run the country? I know we have separation of powers, but the executive branch...
Well, you have to remember this. The only way our government is accountable to us is through elections. So what the executive branch does and how it operates, we have control over it because we elect the president. The people in the executive branch operate on his authority. So if the executive branch is doing something we don't like, we get rid of the executive. If they're allowed to operate without his input or control, then what is the source of their authority?
Yeah, they're unelected.
That's the question in front of the courts. That will be the question. That's why Supreme Court's going to rule that he can fire Lisa Cook. He fired the BLS lady. He fired the FTC lady. He can fire these people because the administrative agencies encroach on his Article II authority.
Now, the one thing that I think is maybe in dispute, I think we're going to go back to Reagan about the line item veto, that again, these people are paid as part of the executive branch. If he's firing people, is he allowed to reduce those that spending that Congress has authorized?
Well, he doesn't have to because the agency itself has a vacancy, and they just report it as unused wage funds.
They'll never return it.
Well, that...
That's a whole different. That's another 7-hour show. Yeah.
The concern that I have about the Supreme Court is, it is a political agenda court now. There used to be the symbol of the balance of justice, but now is the Supreme Court justice liberal or are they conservative? And it has turned political. And it's running on case law instead of constitutional law. So I see that the balance of power on the Supreme Court has political ramifications as long as it's a political.
It's
always been political. That's why there is such a slam down, mark down, let down fight whenever it's time to put a Supreme Court justice on there because they know it's a political appointment. That's why they were so adamant that Trump would not be allowed to put three justices on there. And you notice that the Democrats, Jackson, Sotomayor, and Kagan, they all vote together as a block, and they're always in the dissent. So when Justice Roberts said, there are no Obama judges, there are no Biden judges, what are you, blind?
But again, they may not be making decisions on case law either. They're making up cases.
But the fact remains that they are supposed to be impartial and ruling on the constitutional.
But they've never been. They've never been.
Never ever.
Never ever.
Boy, am I naive.
Folks, on that, we're going to take a quick break. Again, this is CCTA Wake Up Call.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
Hi, my name's Elena Huber, and I'm running for your New Bern Ward 1 Alderman. As a retired military officer, I offer extensive experience to civic leadership. Years of managing complex operations under pressure make me adept at long-term planning and crisis response. I have led diverse teams through deployments, combat casualties, natural disasters, and the COVID-19 pandemic. My experience with large bureaucracies will help me navigate government systems and promote action from within. Whether it's a hurricane or budget shortfall, I have been trained to be calm in the storm, bringing order and clarity. With 22 years spent developing others and building teams, I am equipped to promote effective action, and I am ready to go to work. Please vote for me on Election Day, October 7th, and early voting begins on September 18th.
Welcome back. Again, thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Pat, you want to take us over to the world of
Cracker Barrel.
Okay.
I want to talk about Cracker Barrel. Cracker Barrel just announced a major shift. They're going to stop doing the redecorations. So the shops, the restaurants that haven't been redecorated yet and haven't had all the stuff pulled down off the walls, painted white, and had the furniture removed,
the
religious music stopped playing in the shop. I don't know about the adding beer. I was really disappointed to hear that Cracker Barrel was serving beer.
The only other thing that I want to find out, are they going to go back to the homemade food? Because I heard criticism that they were getting some fast freeze-dried food or, you know, pre-portioned servings shipped in. But they were great for the homemade food.
Heard that.
Okay. Well, Cracker Barrel was always a place where you got Southern cooking in moderation. You got biscuits the size of your hand. You got mashed potatoes and gravy. I mean, you know, and if you were into collard greens, that was the place you could get them. Mm-hmm. And it was just, I always love Cracker Barrel.
Meatloaf. Chicken and dumplings.
Meatloaf.
Mm-hmm. Meatloaf. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to swap. So,
well, I just want one further comment about Cracker Barrel. When the controversy all started, they announced the redecorations and whatnot on the Today Show. She was Massino, who's the new CEO, was interviewed by Michael Strahan. And he asked her, he said, if the customers come at you and want you to stop modernizing the restaurants, will you do so? And she kind of giggled and said, well, I'll give you an anecdote. I was just down in Orlando, and we bring all of our managers there every other year. And they were coming up to me and saying, when can I get a remodel? How do I get on the list? Everybody was just overjoyed about it. And Jimmy Failla on his podcast said, yeah, who in that group was going to go up to the CEO and say, you know what? Your ideas suck. You know? Okay. So apparently, because they lost $115 million off their cap, their market cap, they're going to stop doing the redecorations too, which is good.
And how the liberal agenda will work in this? This woman will become a hero for how much money she saved Cracker Barrel.
Yeah.
For not having to do the redos.
Okay. Well, how does she still have a job?
Yeah.
That's what I want to know.
I love the gift shop. I really do.
Folks, we're gonna change gears right now. Again, CCTA, we're a 501c3 organization. We do not endorse candidates. We stand for positions, but we don't endorse candidates. Right now, we're in the middle of an election season in New Bern. In New Bern, and we've tried to make this show available to any candidates that wanted to come and just sort of explain what they're doing and whatever else. And right now, we're going to have one of the candidates. We're going to have Nadine Buchanan here. Nadine, and we went to one of the forums for all of the, most of the candidates showed up on Monday and you had another one on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. How's it going?
I think it's going rather well. I appreciate.
Now you're running for
absolutely. Let me. Well, I was just going to answer Bob's question. I'm running for Ward 4 Alderman of the city of New Bern. Ward 4, for individuals who may not know where that is, it's primarily in the H. May McDonald district area, Colony Estates, Derby Park, Forest Park. We also have the new subdivision that's out off of the 7043 across from the DMV. And a few streets over in the Sherwood Forest area off of Noose. So that is the Ward 4 area. As far as the public forums that we've been afforded the opportunities to go to, I absolutely love them. I think that it's a great opportunity for citizens across the board to come. The one last night, there were some folks actually from James City who was there that they just wanted to be educated on what was going on and be informed of what's going on and maybe potentially impacting our city as we transition into this new board, because we have only three of the six ward seats that we have incumbents that are running. So there will be a different board come October 8th, the day after the election. I think it went rather well. It is surprising to me that to see, I know in the one for Monday night, it was open to all candidates to come and participate. And one incumbent, Bobby Astor, who is running unopposed and did not have to participate, did show up to show support for the candidates, to show support for the community, which I believe that that's a great, fine example of true leadership. But the other two incumbents who have opposition, one in Ward 4, my opponent, Johnny Ray Kinsey, did not show up, did not respond, and neither did the Barbara Best in Ward 5. And to me, if you are seeking re-election, I think it's very important that you show up to your community events to engage with your community. They need to be aware of what your stances are and what it is that you stand for so that we can get the feedback from the community. So I am disappointed that the current leadership, when they have that opportunity to come to the forums, choose not to engage with the community.
Isn't it true that, what is it, Barbara Best doesn't go to the meetings either?
My understanding is that she does now. I can't speak for her complete history since Ward 5 is not the area I'm really focusing on right now as far as the alderman seat. That would be best served to ask her opposition, Manny Ruiz.
Mm-hmm.
He could fill you in more about that one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
So
yes,
ma'am. What kind of things differentiate you between you and your the incumbent? What would you do that's different?
Incumbent or opponent, yeah.
Incumbent or opponent, yes, because I am in a unique position where there are three of us running for this ward. For me, what sets me apart is I believe that I am truly engaged in and concerned about what's going on in the community. I'm out knocking doors. I'm out talking to residents and talking to citizens. And one of the things that they talk a lot about is public safety. I mean, they are concerned a little bit about that uptick in gang violence, but our police force is doing a phenomenal job reeling that in and working with trying to get that taken care of. So them, I'm talking with them, some of the things that they're concerned about for public safety is the speeding that's in the neighborhoods and pedestrian, high traffic pedestrian crosswalks. We have a lot of seniors and disabled folks in our community that they want to get across the street to go to Food Lion. They want to go walk down the street to Walmart. They don't have transportation, so they have, some of them are on walkers and in wheelchairs or just slower because of age and circumstances. And they, what can we do to enhance those crosswalks? Also, something else that differentiates. Woo! Between me and my opponents is that I'm essentially doing the work of an alderman right now in my current position. I'm a property manager. Most people might think, oh, property manager, you just
collect rent,
offer the apartments and move forward. But this is a low-income senior disabled community. It's 76 units. city residents. I have to overmanage a budget. I have to manage a community center, a laundromat, a fitness center, a maintenance department. I have to work and engage with first responders regarding incidents and issues that occur on the property. I'm also a community organizer, a counselor, and an advisor. I have to do a separate national night out with my residents and provide community events monthly. So in essence, I am kind of a manager, a city mayor, and an alderman, all within a city, within the city of New Bern. And so on a small scale, I know what it takes. And I know the important thing is to listen to what your residents have to say. I keep saying residents, I'm thinking about being property manager, what your citizens have to say, and to be accessible to them. Mm-hmm. Another thing that will set me apart is the fact that I've already committed to at least once a month, allowing 2 hours of time that I make known, this is where I'm going to be, come speak to me, let's have a conversation, because I recognize, again, transportation is an issue for folks, so they may not be able to get to the alderman meetings, or they may be fearful to do the public comment. We have a lot of bold people in our community, but we also have folks that they want their issues to be known, but they don't want to get up and speak in the microphone. That's a terrifying thing for some folks. And so offering that opportunity of, hey, come meet me at the coffee shop, come meet me at one of the local restaurants, or if you want to walk, let's go take a walk around the park or whatever it is. Share with me what's going on and let me see what I can do to help.
Mm-hmm. I like the idea of the accessibility. I think that's good. I know a lot of people don't like public speaking.
Yes.
It's tough.
It is.
Now, what do you think is the major issue in your district or new ward?
In my ward, it seems to be, the public safety trigger more than anything else. We do have the school right there and the kids going to and from school, a lot of them walking from one area to the other. Now that they have done great with putting in the flashing pedestrian crosswalks and of that nature. But again, it goes back to the speeding down certain roads and the crosswalks. That's a lot of the concern. There is a little bit about some noise ordinances as well. We have some churches in that area that let's tone down the volume just a little. How can we help with that as well? So,
you know, it's interesting. This year's ballot, not only will be electing aldermen and their mayor, but there's also three bond issues on there. And it was interesting to hear some of the candidates that don't want to commit where they stand on the bond issue. And yes, I know I want to hear where some of the candidates stand, but I also know, folks, the bond issues are there for you to vote on. Mm-hmm. The aldermen will not be voting for you. You are required to get out and vote on the bond issues. Now, again, there's three separate bond issues, one dealing with the sidewalks and streets, one dealing with sewage or wastewater, what is it, stormwater.
Blood water.
And then the third one is
Parks and Recs,
yes. And so there's three bond issues there.
But the interesting part of that is most of the aldermen candidates have been willing to explain the bond issues and what they would do. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, voters get to choose, but voters need to do their research.
Absolutely. Voters do need to do the research. That's another reason why I love all the forums that we've been having. And the city has done a great job. They have been doing open forums, if you will, for the bond referendum. I believe that there's actually one at Stanley White on the 10th, I know there's at least two others. You can go to the city website and find out where they are. So I would encourage you to go to one of those to talk with city officials to understand more about the bond referendums. And to your point, Bob, as far as supporting or not supporting them, I support the bonds. I don't say what I'm going to vote on because I don't ask anyone else what they're voting on. That's why we have the voting booths. We go in privately to vote yes or no. That's my right as a citizen. So while I support the bonds, my vote is my vote, and I acknowledge that for everyone else.
Folks, on that, we're going to have to end the show. When does early voting start?
Early voting starts September 18th.
It's at Stanley White
Rec Center from 8 to 5. There's only one Saturday the 4th, October the 4th, from 8 to 3.
Very good. Thanks for listening to the CCTA Wake Up Call.